We have been studying together on Sunday mornings the Sermon on the Mount found in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. We have looked at some life-changing attitudes in the Beatitudes, and we've considered whether we destroy or fulfill God's law. And today we'd like to look at verses 21 through 48, a larger section, and talk about how unrighteousness does begin in the heart. In the reading that was brought forth, which was actually from Matthew chapter 15, Jesus teaches that out of the heart proceed many things, and out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts and murders, adulteries, fornication, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. He says it's not whether you wash your hands before you eat that defile you, but rather what's in your heart that can defile you. And that was Jesus' teaching also in Matthew chapter 5, and he uses several Old Testament commands and Old Testament laws that we looked at there. Now, you'll remember that Jesus there was on the edge of Galilee, and he was up on a mountain, and the disciples came to him. And you'll also remember that we are considering verse 20 to be a primary verse in our study, that if they wanted to be righteous, that they wanted to be followers of Jesus, wanted to be members of the kingdom of heaven, that their righteousness had to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. And Jesus, in today's lesson that we have, that we're studying, Jesus really gets to the heart of that because he talks about how unrighteousness begins in the heart. And Jesus also talks about how righteousness begins in the heart as well. He looks at five Old Testament laws, unchanging laws, and Jesus didn't destroy those laws, but he expanded upon them, and he showed them how it wasn't just following technical commands, but Jesus dug deeper, and he talked about the attitudes and the thoughts that we have within us. You see, the Pharisees loved technicalities. The Pharisees loved loopholes. And they might technically obey a command that was found. And they might be able to say, here's what it says, and here's what I've done, and so I've obeyed God. And Jesus says, you might do that and have not obeyed God at all. You might have been very precise in doing something, but your heart is so corrupt that you have not obeyed God in any way. And I think that's the point that we'll see today as we look through here. It's more than just outward compliance. When we have looked at these passages, and you know what they are, Jesus says, you have heard it said, but I say to you, and he talks about several different things, things like murder and adultery, and we'll look at some others. When I was growing up, the standard line was, what this means is, you would if you could. If you had the opportunity, you would do it. I think Jesus' teaching goes deeper than that. In a study of this, I believe that what Jesus says is that you might not actually do it if you had the opportunity, but you would sure like to. When he talks about a brother, I would sure like to do him harm. Or when he talks about lust, I would sure like to follow up on that, but I'll technically keep the commands. But that's not what my heart is about. Let's take a look at that today as we study together and as we look at some commands and see how unrighteousness and, well, righteousness as well, it begins in the heart. When we consider, first of all, Jesus talks about anger. And it's not wrong to be angry, by the way. You recall that in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 26, Christians are commanded to be angry sometimes. Be angry and do not sin. And not all angry is sin. Anger is sin. But Jesus here, he talks about these things. And let's go ahead and read And by the way, if you like to follow along in your own Bible, we'll be staying right in Matthew chapter 5 today. Sometimes I run you here and there in our different studies. Today we're going to stay right in Matthew chapter 5 because there's plenty for us to point out. It says, "You have heard it said that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be in danger of the judgment.' But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, 'Raca,' shall be in danger of the council. And whoever says, 'You fool,' shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge and the judge hand you over to the officer and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you have paid the last penny." You know, murder is rampant in our society. Do you turn on the news? I sometimes see the morning news. The morning news out of Indianapolis, the national news. In Indianapolis, I don't think a day goes by that you don't hear some report about some death at the hands of someone else. And it doesn't have to be in that big of a city. How many times do we hear about someone suffering some terrible tragedy in Bloomington? Occasionally, even here in Ellettsville. But Jesus says that there would be like those Pharisees in verse 20. That they wouldn't go out and maybe kill someone, or they might. But they're more likely to have this hatred in their heart and to speak so harshly with their brothers that they show no care and no regard, and they get so angry with them that they tear them down and don't build them up. They might not physically destroy their body, but with their words, Jesus says, with the raca, "You empty-headed person, you fool," with your words, you destroy them. He says, you might not take a sword and thrust them through. In our society, you might not take the gun and shoot them. But with your words, you destroy them. Because you're so filled with anger and malice and all those ugly things in your life, you do them harm. Jesus, it's the same thing. Now, he's not saying, by the way, that if you hate him, it's just the same, so you might as well go kill him. He's not saying that. And so don't think as we go down through each of these points that Jesus is teaching, well, if I have that in my heart, I might as well do it. Not Jesus' point. But he's saying that if you're corrupt in your heart, you're corrupt before God. And so there are some dangers here that we need to think about. That when you detest or have no patience or no regard for a brother or sister, when you would like to just never see them again, or when your words about or toward a brother or sister in Christ or toward another human being is so harsh and hard and nasty, Jesus says you wouldn't go out and kill them. But when your heart is so corrupt that you have that kind of anger in your heart, you're guilty before God. And so when you find yourself leaning in that direction, when you find yourself that you are pushing in that direction, you need to beware that there's great danger in that anger. Because in that kind of anger, in that kind of disregard, Jesus says, you're like a Pharisee Have you ever thought about how we can be Pharisees today? Well, Jesus says here, that's how the Pharisees are. They have taught you not to commit murder. But Jesus says, in my kingdom, things go deeper. Let's consider another. Jesus talks about lust here in verses 27 through 32. And he says, you have heard it. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. One of those 10 commandments. One of the commandments they would have held in very high esteem. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it is more profitable that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. Furthermore, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife for any reason except sexual immorality causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a woman who is divorced commits adultery. When we think about this, those Pharisees might never take that step of being with a woman who they had no right to. And it's not just if they would, they could, but maybe somewhere down deep in their heart, they wished that they could. Do you think that we might be in that? Do you think that we might need to be on guard? When Paul wrote to flee fornication, to run away from it, to escape it, that we needed to be like that, that we needed to be like Joseph, who when there was a woman of some authority who wanted to lie with him, that he ran away so fast from that, he would not be with her for one moment, that he actually allowed part of his clothing to be pulled away from him. Jesus here makes a point about divorce, and we're going to reserve the discussion on divorce for an entire lesson itself at a different time and incorporate Matthew 19 in here. But adultery destroys families. It brings about divorce. It brings about the ugliest things that we can possibly think about. So how do we apply this today? How can we escape this lust where Jesus says that when you look at a woman to lust after her, notice what he says, you look to lust. It's not that you happen to notice maybe that someone is very beautiful. Here you look to lust. Sometimes we need to take control of our eyes. And maybe when you're staring too long, you need to use the neck and turn your head away. Sometimes we can look to lust by the things we choose to set before our eyes. Maybe it is immodesty and impurity that we see on television, or maybe we bring up things on the computer, via the internet, immoral things which ought not to be set before our eyes, that stir up impure, immoral, wrong thoughts. What would Jesus say to us today? Would our righteousness exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes if we are putting things that cause us to have these impure thoughts intentionally before our eyes? It may be that you have a thought and you allow that to persist and you think about that and you dwell on that. You know, you can change your mind. You can choose to think about something else. You can choose to read a scripture. You can choose to look at something different. But that kind of unrighteousness begins in the heart. And so when Jesus says, that's where adultery starts, he wants us to have pure hearts not just purity from doing the actual act. Jesus talks about dishonesty in this study. And in Matthew 5, 33 through 37, he says, "Again, you have heard it said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.' But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one." When Jesus says don't swear, he's not talking here about the kind of words we sometimes call swear words. We shouldn't use that. We shouldn't use filthy language. That, too, is a sin. But he's talking about being so honest and of such high character that when we say yes, that's enough. And when we say no, that's enough. How many words does it take to convince someone you're telling the truth? Do sometimes we hear this? Whatever we say and say, "It's the truth. I'm not lying. You can believe what I have to say. I swear to..." And sometimes taking God's name in vain. How many words does it take? You know, I find it concerning when someone has to try to convince me they're telling the truth. We need to be of such character and such honesty that no one will believe that we were lying. Let your yes be yes and your no, no. It would seem to me that those Pharisees, if they would say, "I'm telling the truth and I swear by heaven, or I swear by earth, or I swear by Jerusalem, or I swear by my head," wouldn't you worry about when they didn't say that? If they were telling you the truth or not? Unrighteousness is not just telling the lie. It's not just finding a technicality, a loophole. Well, yeah, this is kind of true. But it's being so honest and of such integrity that no one would believe that we're lying. Jesus talks about retaliation. When we look in verses 38 through 42, he says, "For you have heard it that it was said, 'An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.' But I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. And whoever wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away." You know, the Old Testament law, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, restoring what was taken, or making someone suffer the same punishment that they've inflicted upon someone else, that was fair. But we're not called upon to be fair. We need to be better than fair. And what Jesus says here is, it would be better for you to suffer wrong and to seek the other person's good, to help someone who intends you harm, someone who's mistreated you, and the opportunity comes about to help them and to serve them. Would you do that? If you have someone who's spoken evil of you, maybe they have tried to turn others against you. Maybe they've even physically harmed. And then somewhere down the road, there comes an opportunity that you can get even. I'm going to show them what I felt like when they did that to me. Eye for an eye. Jesus here teaches us that when people have mistreated us and they have done evil to us, maybe they continue to, that we'll be willing to help and serve and not take a retaliatory attitude. What's in our heart? You know, sometimes we look at the passage, and I find it kind of amusing that we say that, well, I'm going to do good to them because it's going to heap coals of fire on their head. I don't think that was Jesus' point. I'm going to burn them up. I think it was, you do the good and leave the rest to God. Let God be the one who extracts justice, and you do good. What's in our heart? You see, if we're heaping coals of fire upon our head because we think this is going to make them feel so bad, when they have treated me so bad and I treat them so good, it's going to hurt them so much. Well, we've already taken our retaliation. One more. And Jesus deals with hate. And in verses 43 through 48, he says, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? From a worldly perspective. Those who are close to me, those who are friends, those who I interact with every day, those who are good to me, I'm going to love them. They're dear. And those who have intended me harm, I'm just going to hate them with the strongest kind of hate there is. Jesus says, but I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, and do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Who receives God's blessings? This morning, as you stepped out and it was raining, did it just rain on your house? Did it just water your lawn? Jesus says, those who are your enemies, you need to love. And you need to be mature and like Christ. Romans 5:10 tells us that when we were enemies, Christ died for us. We become more like God. We become sons of our Father in heaven. We become more perfect and mature and more like Christ when we get rid of the hate that's in our heart and we serve God. So you think about these things. I said righteousness begins in the heart too. Do you see the contrast there? Anger starts in the heart, but so does forgiveness toward our brother. And the kindness that we can show. Lust begins in the heart, but so does a committed devotion to being in self-control because we love God so much. Dishonesty begins in the heart, but so does telling the truth. Retaliation versus kindness, they are matters of the heart. Hate or having the love of God in our lives. I'd have to think about this, and I'd ask you as we think about this, what is in your heart? I hope it's not any of those terrible things that Jesus warns against. but I hope that you've committed yourself to being pure in heart. But as we think about that, you might consider Romans chapter 6 and verse 17. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. If you never obeyed the gospel, obedience to the gospel begins in the heart with a love for God and a belief in Jesus Christ, a desire to turn away from sin, an honest confession that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and to be baptized into Christ. You do that from the heart and you obey that doctrine. Is that in your heart to do this morning? Everything's ready and we're ready to help you. Maybe you've wandered away from God and it's time to come home. Maybe you've been unfaithful. Maybe you've had all those terrible things in your heart and maybe in your actions as well. I'd ask you to consider whether you need to obey from the heart so that you might need to be restored and serve God faithfully. Jesus taught about these things in Matthew 5. We need to live them today. And so if you need to respond to the gospel call, come forward, have a seat on the front as we stand and sing.